The History of Nursery Rhymes. And it's going to be a little on the brutal side, because the way that they are told today has no real bearing on the way they were originally told. So sit back and strap in for some real bizarre tales. The 16th century in Italy and France, you begin having these fairy tales, and of course they are all folk tales that have been passed around from generation to generation. For example, those that were cataloged by the Brothers Grimm in the 1800s. But for example, you're going to find in the originals, rape, child abuse, and abandonment are the stuff of contemporary headlines, but they're also themes central to many of our most beloved fairy tales, as they were originally conceived. The original Sleeping Beauty does not end happily. Once the princess is awakened with a kiss, her real troubles begin. She is raped and abandoned and has her illegitimate children threatened with being eaten. In the authentic version of Little Red Riding Hood, the wolf hasn't finished eating Grandma when he pounces on Red Riding Hood, ripping her limb to limb. Many artists of the day, believing that the two violent deaths were much too much for children to endure, refused to illustrate the tale. To make it more palatable, one illustrator introduced a hunter who at the last minute kills the wolf, saving, at least, Little Red Riding Hood. In the present century, numerous critics continue to argue that many fairy tales and nursery rhymes read to children and repeated by them are quintessentially unsavory, with their thinly veiled themes of lunacy, drunkenness, maiming of humans and animals, theft, gross dishonesty. The stories do contain all of these elements and more, particularly if they are recounted in their original versions. Well, why in the world did the creators of these tales do this? Well, one answer centers around the fact that from Elizabethan times to the early 19th century, children were regarded as miniature adults. Families were confined to cramped quarters, thus children kept the same late hours as adults. They overheard and repeated body language and were not shielded from the sexual shenanigans of their elders. Children witnessed drunkenness and drank at early age, and since public floggings, hanging, disembowelments, and imprisonments in stocks, were well attended in town squares, violence, cruelty, and death were no stranger to children. Life was harsh. Fairy tales blended blissful fantasy with that harsh reality, and exposing children to the combination seemed perfectly natural then and not particularly harmful at the time. One man more than others, Charles Perrault, is responsible for immortalizing several of our most cherished fairy tales. However, Perrault did not originate all of them. As we'll see, many existed in the oral tradition and had been eventually written down. Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, Little Red Riding Hood are but three of the stories penned by this 17th century Frenchman, a rebellious school dropout who failed at several professions and then turned to fairy tales when their telling became popular at the court of Louis XIV. Charles Perrault was born in Paris in 1628, the fifth and youngest son of a distinguished author and member of the French Parliament. He was taught to read at an early age by his mother. In the evenings, after supper, he would have to render the entire day's lesson to his father in Latin. As a teenager, Perrault rebelled against formal learning. Instead, he embarked on an independent course of study, concentrating on various subjects as mood and inclination suited him. This left him dilettantishly educated in many fields and well prepared for none. In 1651, he obtained a license to practice law. He bribed his examiners and bought himself academic credentials. The practice of law soon bored Perrault. He married and had four children and the same number of jobs in the government. Discontent also with public work, he eventually turned to committing to paper the fairy tales he told his children. In 1697, his landmark book was published in Paris, and it's titled Tales of Times Past. It contained 8 stories, remarkable in themselves, but even more noteworthy in that all except one became and remained world-renowned. They are in the original translated titles, The Sleeping Beauty in the Wood, Little Red Riding Hood, Bluebeard, The Master Cat or Puss in Boots, Diamonds and Toads, Cinderella or The Little Glass Slipper, and Hop O' My Thumb. The 8th and least famous tale was the story of a deformed prince's romance with a beautiful but witless princess. Perrault did more than merely record stories that were already part of oral and written tradition. Perrault's genius was to realize that the charm of the tale lay in their simplicity, imbuing them with magic. He made them more intentionally naive, as if a child, having heard the tales in the nursery, was telling them to a friend. Modern readers, unacquainted with the original versions of the tales recorded by Perrault and others, may understandably find them shocking. What follows are the origins and earliest renditions of major tales we were told as children and that we continue to tell our children. The first one, 1636, from Italy, is Sleeping Beauty. Sleeping Beauty in the Wood was the opening tale in Charles Perrault's 1697 book. It is the version we still tell today, but it did not represent the complete original story. Perrault's recounting omits many of the beautiful princess's horrible ordeals. The first written version of the tale was published in Italy in 1636 by Gambiasta Basile in his collection Petronome. In this Neapolitan Sleeping Beauty, a great king is forewarned by a wise man that his newborn daughter Talia is in peril from a poisoned splinter in flax. Although the king bans flax from the palace, Talia, as a young girl, happens upon a flax spinning wheel and immediately catches a splinter beneath her fingernail, falling dead. Grief-stricken, the king lays his daughter's body on a velvet cloth, locks the palace gates, and leaves the forest forever. At this point, our modern version and the original diverge. A nobleman hunting in the woods discovers the abandoned palace and the body of the princess. Instead of merely kissing her, he rapes her and departs. 9 months later, the sleeping Talia gives birth to twins, a boy and a girl, named Sun and Moon. They are looked after by fairies. One day, the male infant sucks on his mother's finger and the poisonous splinter is dislodged, restoring Talia to consciousness. Months pass, and the nobleman, recollecting his pleasurable encounter with the fair-haired Sleeping Beauty, revisits the palace and finds her awake. He confesses to being the father of her children, and they enjoy a week-long affair before he leaves again for his wife, whom he conveniently never mentions. The original story at this point gets increasingly, if not gratuitously, bizarre. The nobleman's wife learns of her husband's bastard children. She has them captured and assigns them to her cook with orders to have their young throats slashed and their flesh prepared in a savory hash. Only when her husband has half finished the dish does she gleefully announce, "You are eating what is your own." For a time, the nobleman believes he has eaten his children, but it turns out that the tender-hearted cook spared the twins and substituted goat meat. The enraged wife orders that the captured Talia be burned alive at the stake, but the Sleeping Beauty is saved at the last moment by the father of her children. Significantly different from what we watch, and that is my favorite movie from Disney. Little Red Riding Hood. This is from France. 1697. Now this tale is the shortest and one of the best known of Perrault's stories. Historians have found no version of the story prior to Perrault's manuscript, in which both Granny and the Little Red Riding Hood are devoured. The wolf, having consumed Grandma, engages Red in what folklorists claim is one of the cleverest, most famous question and answer sequences in all children's literature. Charles Dickens confessed that Little Red was his first love. As a child, he longed to marry her. He later wrote that he bitterly deplored the cruelty and treachery of that dissembling wolf who ate her grandmother without making any impression on his appetite and then ate Little Red after making a ferocious joke about his teeth. In fact, many writers objected to Perrault's gruesome ending and provided their own. In a popular 1840 British version, Red Riding Hood was about to be attacked by the wolf, screams loudly, and in rushes her father and some other hunters, who, seeing the wolf, kill him at once. During the same period, the French children heard a different ending. The wolf is about to pounce on Red when a wasp flies through the window and stings it on the tip of his nose. The wolf cries in pain, alerting a passing hunter, who lets fly an arrow, and it strikes the wolf right through the ear and kills him on the spot. Perhaps the goriest of all the versions of the tale emerged in England at the end of the 19th century. This popular telling concludes with the wolf collecting the grandmother's blood in bottles, which he then induces Red Riding Hood to drink. It is interesting to note that while all the revisions endeavor to save Red, none of them spare the grandmother. The Grimm brothers, 120 years after Perrault, provided yet another version, the only one that spares Granny. The wolf, Logie, after dining and Grandma and Red, falls asleep. His thunderous snores attract the attention of a hunter who enters the house, guesses what has transpired, and rips open the wolf's stomach with a pair of scissors. Out jumps Red Riding Hood, exclaiming how dark it was inside the wolf. Then an exhausted, disheveled, and silent grandmother steps out, and the wolf is chased away. Folklorists believe that before Perrault immortalized Little Red Riding Hood by committing it to paper in his skilled style, the story existed as oral tradition, perhaps as early as the Middle Ages. We'll continue on our little trail of the history of nursery rhymes, as scary as they are, next time. Now the source for this is our wonderful friend Pinotti's Extraordinary Origins of Everyday Things by Pinotti. So I hope you enjoyed that. As always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out the merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.